quickly. And I have pictures for 10 other people in the community who will need passes as well. He looked at her apologetically. I don't mean to take advantage, but these people have nowhere else to turn. Eva left Mario and Julia's apartment with the 12 pictures tucked into her brassiere and a promise to be back with the passes as soon as she could arrange for their completion. She simply had to get past Angelo and get back to Florence to see Aldo. She would buy a round-trip ticket, work all night, and return to Rome the next day. If Angelo would let her, she would deliver pictures and obtain more passes for his refugees as well. She found him at the synagogue, standing in line with several other priests from parishes across the city. Angelo had managed to gather a significant amount of gold from non-Jewish Romans, who wanted to contribute but thought they might be turned away by the rich Jews. Old stereotypes persisted, apparently. No one was turned away. The average contribution was an eighth of an ounce, and the fear of failure was palpable. The lieutenant major of the SS graciously extended the deadline by 4 hours, and then 4 hours more. The rumors started to circulate that the Pope would step in and donate Catholic gold if the Jews failed to gather the required amount. Uncle Augusto relayed the rumor to Angelo, grinning like a Cheshire cat.
What did I tell you, Padre? We have nothing to worry about in the shadow of the Vatican.
Miraculously, the number was reached without a donation from the Vatican. And more than 110 pounds, 50 kilograms of gold, consisting of every last precious thing sacrificed by an already impoverished people, was delivered to German headquarters before the deadline on September 28th. The Jews of Rome congratulated themselves. Augusto opened a bottle of wine, and a collective sigh of relief echoed down the cobblestone streets. But the very next day, trucks pulled up in front of the synagogue and emptied out the rabbinical library. Every book, every sacred scroll, and every precious document. Then they cleared out all the offices, carrying out filing cabinets full of records, contributor lists, and community members. Jewish leaders watched helplessly as every last piece of paper was confiscated by the very Germans who had promised to leave them alone only the day before. The city held its breath once more, but the week passed uneventfully. Then another. Eva bought a ticket for Florence and informed Angelo she was going. Regardless of the lull, time was running out for the Soninos. He argued heatedly, but when she wouldn't relent, he arranged to go with her. And they set out for Florence again, less than a month after Eva had arrived. The trip went without incident. No one stopped them. No one questioned them. No one looked twice at the two of them. They saw no one they knew, and no one they knew saw them, except Aldo, who welcomed them to his little workshop at dusk. He reported the same thing. All was peaceful in the city of flowers. But his expression echoed the nagging feeling none of them could shake. They spent all night setting type, tightening the string and screwing down the plates, adjusting the ink, refilling the feed board, and churning out card after precious card. Then they attached pictures and stamped the seals, printed emblems, and assigned names of southern places that the Germans would have no way to verify. They dried, cut, trimmed, stacked, and started all over again with different samples from different places guiding their efforts. Eva and Angelo took quick turns napping on a corner cot, and they finished the long night with a stack of hope and blackened fingers. Aldo's fingers were perpetually stained. But Angelo and Eva spent 20 minutes scrubbing their hands raw to remove the evidence of the night's activities. They boarded the 6 a.m. Rapido for Rome, with fresh clothes and red hands without ever seeing Fabia and Santino. It couldn't be helped. But Eva realized Angelo had probably been in Florence dozens of times over the last 2 years without ever seeing her.
I forgive you,
Ava murmured, closing her eyes as the gong sounded and the train pulled away from the station, right on time.
You do, he answered just as softly.
He sounded as tired as she felt.
Yes, I do.
But maybe I shouldn't.
How many times have you come to Florence since the war broke out?
Many times, he confessed.
And I never saw you. Not once.
No.
Why?
He opened one of his eyes and looked at her. She'd already opened hers.
You know why, Ava.
Something hot and needy sliced in her belly, and she closed her eyes once more, unable to continue the conversation without revealing her longing for the forbidden. Her lips tingled and her palms grew damp, and she had a hard time drawing breath. It took her a long time to drift off, and nothing more was said on the subject of knowledge and forgiveness.
Hisako Sonino,
a healthy 7-pound baby boy, was born on October 15, 1943. He was delivered by his father, but was passed quickly to Ava, who washed him, diapered him, and bundled him in the thin white blanket Julia had set out in preparation. Ava had never held a baby before, never diapered one either, but she managed with the help of Isabella Donati, an old woman from across the hall who had been a business owner before her shop was closed by the racial laws. Her husband was gone, her two sons lost in the Great War, and she claimed there was nothing left for her to do and little left to fear. She was as calm and comforting as a breeze in summertime, and Ava liked her immensely. She made a note to herself to convince the woman to come to the convent at Santa Cecilia. There was room, though Angelo had placed two families there in the last week. Ava would like her company, the nuns would like her soup, and Signora Donati would be safe. Ava had come to the apartment late that afternoon with the precious passes in hand. All that needed to be added were the fake names, the signatures, and the fingerprints. But Julia was already well into her labor, and Ava tucked the passes away and stayed, making herself as useful as possible, playing with the children, timing contractions, and eventually, in the early hours of the morning, watching a baby come into the world. Signora Donati went home at midnight, but the curfew made it too dangerous for Ava to walk home, and so she stayed put, putting the other children, who had slept in fits and spurts throughout the long night, back to bed. As the hour approached morning, Mario made his way out the front door, bleary-eyed but smiling, claiming he needed to be the first in line for rations with another mouth to feed. Lorenzo and Emilia, bedded down in the living room, were awakened once more, and they were irritable and hungry. Ava warmed what was left of the soup and let them fill their bellies in hopes they would sleep again. When they finished, she brought out Mario's violin and tuned the strings by ear, plucking and tightening until Emilia grew impatient and begged for a song.
"Can you play the bird song?"
Little Emilia started to sing in lisping Yiddish, a song about being a free bird and a loyal little friend, something Ava herself had been taught as a child, and Ava felt her own fear abate.
"I don't know that one very well. Sing it a few more times so I can learn it."
The little girl kept singing, and before long Ava was moving the bow across the strings, matching Emilia's sweet voice with the wail of the violin.
"Something else,"
Emilia said suddenly, with the limited attention of the very young.
"Something happy,"
Lorenzo grumbled, unable to resist the lure of distraction.
"But you need to sleep. We've been awake all night, and your mother is sleeping now. I will play something from America. How about that? But you must lay down and close your eyes," Ava insisted.
The children climbed under their blankets on the makeshift bed and closed their eyes obediently. Eva left the smallest lamp on and curled up on the sofa, determined to get the children to sleep before their father came home. He would need sleep, too. It had been the longest night of her life, and Eva longed to close her own eyes and grab a few minutes of rest. She notched her violin between her shoulder and her chin and channeled a little Duke Ellington, smiling as she thought of Angelo shaking his hips and his head, the first time he'd introduced her to jazz music. It had been during the week at the beach house, the time he'd kissed her for real, the one time he'd loved her. Then he'd donned a cassock and rejected her once and for all. "It don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing." Those were the only words she could sing, and only because Angelo had told her what they meant. He'd laughed when she'd tried to say them, her mouth tripping over the blunt words. But she wasn't a singer, and the words weren't important. The song was fun and fast. But she didn't want fun and fast, and she changed the tempo, the melody curling from the strings, making the song unrecognizable, haunting even. Angelo said jazz was all about lament. She could hear it now. The dissonance of the song, stripped down and robbed of its tempo, made it sound like a song for Shabbat. "That's not happy," Lorenzo yawned, but his eyes were closed. Emilia was asleep already. "But it's beautiful. And beauty is always joyful."
"It doesn't sound like American music," he mumbled. Then he was quiet.
Eva played for a few more minutes, her eyes heavy, her limbs loose, and her head drooped as she slid the violin to her lap. Dawn would come soon, and when Mario returned, she would stumble home. But she would sleep until then. She came awakened to her feet when screams pierced the night. Pounding feet and a series of gunshots rang out from somewhere outside. Eva scrambled for the window, pushing the curtain aside so she could squint down at the still darkened streets to make out what was happening below. It was raining, and the darkness was inky and slick. Then she saw them. Germans. SS officers in their gunmetal gray raincoats and bulbous black helmets, almost blending into the night. They lined the alley, and as she watched, one lifted his weapon and shot at the sky, sending the message that no one should try to get past them. Answering shots came from farther off. The building came awake with a start, and as Eva watched, one family, then another, staggered into the dark streets, still in their bedclothes, holding children and clutching each other. They were herded immediately into the back of a waiting truck. The Sonnino's apartment was four floors up, and it was only a matter of time before the Germans were pounding at the door. Julia called out from the bedroom beyond, and Eva raced from the window, stepping over the children who had miraculously remained asleep.
"It's the SS, Julia. It looks like they have surrounded the building, maybe the whole ghetto. I can't be sure, but they're loading people in the back of trucks."
Julia rose gingerly, tucking her newborn between two pillows and pulling a robe over her nightgown. She staggered and Eva reached for her, sliding her arm around her narrow back. She was too thin, and now she had a baby to nurse. But at the moment, that was the least of their worries.
"Mario, he isn't back yet,"
she whispered, looking past Eva toward the small sitting room.
"No, but that is good. If he isn't here, they can't arrest him."
Julia started to shake, and Eva knew with a sick surety that if the Gestapo arrested Julia, she wouldn't last a week. Nor would her children.
"We have to hide, Julia," she said firmly. "We have to hide somewhere. Think, where can we hide?"
Julia shook her head numbly, her eyes wide and unblinking.
There is no place. There is nowhere, Eva.
Eva left Julia and ran back to the window. People were filling the streets. Soldiers were shouting instructions, and every so often another shot rang out. Eva hoped it was simply a shot into the sky like the first shot had been. Warning shots, shots designed to incite fear, and not shots aimed at anyone in particular. If the shooting was to instill fear, it was working. Yet Julia's children slept on.
"We will hide here," Eva said briskly.
It wouldn't work. It couldn't, but it was something.
"Here," Julia squeaked. "Help me."
Eva started shoving the rectangular table with the thick marble top, the table that had been too heavy for the previous tenants to attempt to take with them. If she could get it in front of the door and turn it on its side, it would reinforce the door if the Germans tried to break it down. It was the only thing she could think of. Julia was suddenly next to her, pushing with all her meager strength, and they scratched and scraped their way across the wood floor, inching the table toward the door. When they were 2 feet away, they tried to ease it over, but the weight was too great, and it crashed to its side, as high as the knob and extending several feet on either side of the door frame. Eva gave it a final shove, snugging it up under the doorknob. She wondered suddenly if it had been used this way before.
"Is the door locked?"
Julia said feebly, her breath harsh from the exertion. There was blood on her nightgown and drops of it trailing across the bare floor. Eva didn't know how much bleeding was customary after so recently giving birth, but she pretended she didn't see it. There was no time for compassion.
"It's locked, but I want you and the children to go into the bedroom and get in the closet. You'll have to keep the children quiet, no matter what. I will keep the table pressed against the door.
Maybe they will think there is no one here and they will leave, but we have to be absolutely quiet. If they come in, I will tell them I am the only one here."
Eva didn't wait for Julia to respond, but ran to the sleeping children, scooped up little Emilia, and raced to the narrow closet, tucking her into the corner, her small body propped against the back wall. She curled into it like it was her mother's breast, and didn't even let out a whimper. Julia was rousing Lorenzo, helping him stagger into the bedroom, his eyes still closed. Eva trusted that Julia could handle her children from there and shut the bedroom door behind them. She could hear the clatter of boots on the stairs. She ran to the front door and threw herself down, her back against the table, her legs extended to the opposite wall that made up the narrow entryway, serving as a divider between the kitchen and the sitting room. She braced her feet and closed her eyes. She found herself reciting some of the words of the Amida.
"O King, you are a helper, a savior, and a shield. You are mighty forever. You are powerful to save."
She couldn't stand and take 3 steps back, as was customary, and she left the words out. But if God cared about such things at a time like this, he wasn't a God who would bother to save them. Her lips moved over the words, adding,
"Deliver us,"
as she repeated them. The apartment door shook beneath the pounding of an upraised fist.
"Öffne die Tür,"
a voice demanded in German, and Eva slapped a hand over her mouth to muffle the shriek that tried to break loose. There was no sound from the bedroom beyond.
"Öffne die Tür!"
"O King, you are a helper, a savior, and a shield. You are mighty forever. You are powerful to save,"
she mouthed against trembling fingers.
"Open the door!"
another voice shouted in badly accented Italian. Fists beat against the door once more. The doorknob rattled, and there was an emphatic shove from the other side, but the lock held with the heavy table as reinforcement. Again, a powerful shove. Eva's legs started to tremble with exertion. 2 shots rang out above her head, stunning her, and her legs buckled momentarily. German cursing could be heard from the other side of the door. Apparently, the shooter hadn't warned his comrades to cover their ears. There were two holes in the wall about a foot above Ava's braced legs. The bullets had easily penetrated the door and buried themselves in the old plaster wall. A cloud of dust lazily floated down around her. Terrified tears ran down Ava's cheeks, and the prayer died in her throat. But she didn't move, and she didn't scream.
"No one lives there," a voice rang out in the hallway. "It was damaged during the air raids in July. It's been condemned."
"Something is pushing against the door," the German argued.
"Debris. The ceiling collapsed in several places. People died."
Ava realized suddenly that the voice belonged to Isabella Donati. The woman's calm demeanor made her a convincing liar. Her claim that the residents had died should comfort the SS. They wouldn't need to relocate dead Jews. Another shot rang out right above Ava's head. Then another, and the table bucked at her back. One German barked at the other, and then, miraculously, Ava heard them moving away, retreating down the hall to the next apartment. She waited, breath held, listening for their return. She waited for what felt like hours, until there were no more boots, no more cries, and no more confusion in the hall. The silence felt false, like the silence in a room where death waits behind the door, knife raised, waiting for the unsuspecting victim to turn her back. Ava's legs gave out when she tried to stand. Her muscles ached, and delayed shock stole her equilibrium. She moaned and steadied herself on the wall, looking down at the table that now had a web of cracks extending in every direction. Either the last bullet, the bullet she'd felt at her back, hadn't penetrated the marble, or it had miraculously missed her. She stumbled across the parlor and into the bedroom, crossing the tiny space and flinging the closet door wide, anxious to share the news of their deliverance. Julia shrieked, one arm extended, clutching her baby who was latched onto her breast, as if to ward off any would-be attackers. She blinked rapidly at the light, her eyes trying to adjust after an hour spent hiding in the darkness. Apparently, Lorenzo was also temporarily blinded. He barreled out of the closet like a demon freed and crashed into Ava, fists thrashing, fighting as if his life depended on it.
"You can't take us. Leave us alone," he shouted.
"Lorenzo, it's me. It's Ava. Shh. They are gone. They are gone."
She wrapped her arms around the flailing child as the fight left him, and her eyes found his mother once more. Julia staggered to the bed and sat weakly upon it, one hand buttoning her gown, the other wrapped tightly around her now squalling infant.
"They're gone," Ava reassured. "But they've cleared the building. They've taken everyone else."
How many? There were hundreds of Jews living in the ghetto neighborhood. Hundreds.
"Oh, God. Oh, dear God," Julia moaned in horror. "Mario. What if they arrested Mario?"
Ava could only shake her head helplessly.
"Where's Emilia?"
Ava asked suddenly, realizing the little girl was absent.
"She's in the closet,"
Julia laughed hollowly.
"She slept through it all."
The sudden pounding at the front door had Lorenzo crying out, and Julia staggering to her feet, babe in arms.
"Quiet,"
Ava hissed, urging them back toward the closet as she raced for the door, determined to hold it closed once more.
"Julia! Julia!"
A desperate voice, barely muffled by the door. A key scraped in the lock, and Mario Sonnino pressed his face into the small crack in the now opened door.
"Julia!"
he cried.
"It's Mario,"
Ava called, her voice cracking with relief.
"Julia, it's Mario!"
"Papa!"
Lorenzo shouted, racing from the room, ahead of his mother. Help me move the table, Eva instructed, shoving at the heavy furniture, and the little boy was at her side, pushing it out of the way.
Mario fell through the opening, grabbing at his son with one arm, embracing his wife with the other.
Eva took the baby from Julia and held the tiny body against her chest, kissing his downy head and patting his little back. The baby quieted instantly, but Eva's heart was slower to calm. The stress of the last hour was slowly unraveling her control.
They are rounding up all the Jews, going from house to house. I ran all the way here. I was in the queue when the news hit, and everyone left the line, running in different directions, afraid for their lives. I didn't get our rations, Julia,
Mario said sadly as an afterthought.
I thought I was too late. I thought they'd taken you and the children and left me behind.
You were lucky, Eva spoke up. If you'd arrived when they were still here, you'd have been taken, and you might have given us away.
How did you manage? How?
Mario was weeping now, relief and joy seeping from his eyes unchecked.
Is everyone all right? The baby? Emilia?
We hid in the ripostiglio.
Lorenzo puffed out his small chest and placed his hands on his hips.
And we were so quiet, they thought no one was home.
You hid in a closet. All of you,
Mario whispered. His gaze lingered on his wife's face, noting her pallor and the strain that tightened her mouth and lined her eyes.
Not Eva. Eva held the door closed,
Lorenzo offered up. All eyes were suddenly on Eva, Mario's wide with awe.
Your neighbor told them no one lived here. I don't know if they would have moved on if not for her.
Eva's mouth trembled.
Signora Donati is gone, Mario whispered. Her door was wide open. All the doors are open. All down the hall. All except ours. The SS police must have entered each one, making sure no one was left behind. It looks like their phone lines have been cut, too.
They didn't find us,
Lorenzo crowed.
Where will they take them, all those people?
Julia asked quietly.
I don't know.
Mario shook his head in disbelief.
But it won't stop with the ghetto. I heard someone say they have addresses. Names. Rome is no longer safe for Jews.
My sister and her family,
Julia cried, suddenly realizing now that Mario was safe, that she had others to be worried about. The same thing had just occurred to Eva. Uncle Augusto and his family needed to be warned.
I have to go.
Eva thrust the baby into Julia's arms and turned toward the door, halting as she realized she was shoeless. She ran to the lumpy sofa, shoving her feet into her shoes and her arms into the long red coat she had always loved. Now she wished for a coat in the drabbest brown, something that wouldn't draw attention or admiration. She needed to be invisible. Hadn't Babbo always said, "Keep your head down and your manners in place"? The thought of him made her stomach clench painfully.
She missed him. Oh, God, she missed him so much. Had the SS dragged him away like Isabella Donati?
Loaded him up in the back of a truck, never to be seen or heard from again?
Oh, Eva, be careful,
Julia warned. Eva kissed her cheek and embraced Lorenzo before looking up at Mario.
Will you be okay without me?
She asked softly.
I will come back when I can, and we will finish your new documents. Julia needs to be in bed, resting. But you know you can't stay here. If you have nowhere else, come to the convent of Santa Cecilia. We will figure something out.
I will take care of my family,
Mario said firmly, but his eyes found hers and held.
Thank you, Eva. Don't worry about us. We are the lucky ones today. Do you have your pass?
She nodded. Knowing that he wasn't referring to the papers that labeled her a Jew, he was referring to the fake ones, the ones that claimed she was Eva Bianco from Naples.
Mama, a sleepy voice said from the bedroom door, are we playing hide-and-go-seek? I want to count.
Little Emilia was rubbing at her eyes and yawning widely, completely oblivious to the terror of the morning. Her parents laughed quietly, and the laughter broke into grateful tears as they clung to each other and to their small children. Eva slipped out then, letting the young family have a moment together, her mind on what remained of her own family and the danger they all faced.
Chapter 11. Trastevere.
The alley leading out onto the Via del Portico d'Ottavia was eerily quiet, the four cramped blocks wedged between the Tiber and the Teatro di Marcello, gutted of their inhabitants. The dome of the church in the nearby piazza peered down at Eva, making her feel exposed and small. She wanted to run from doorway to doorway, from tree to bush, hiding herself in spurts, but she made herself walk at a leisurely pace. It was early, but not terribly so, and the streets were filling with Romans going about their day. It was as if the terror of the pre-dawn was just a strange mirage, shimmering in and out of focus. She saw a single German truck, thick flaps obscuring its cargo. She didn't duck her head or slink. She walked, telling herself that running would only draw attention, even as her stomach twisted more tightly with each step. She walked across the Garibaldi Bridge and down the wide Viale di Trastevere, too unfamiliar with her surroundings to duck onto side streets. It took too long, and when she finally turned onto the narrow street lined with palms and little stores, she was numb with fear. The street was too quiet, just like Via d'Ottavia, and she finally started to run. She was almost to their building when strong arms wrapped around her from behind and dragged her back. When she cried out, a hand clamped around her mouth as she was pinned between a man's chest and an alcove wall. Eva, shh, be still. It was Angelo. The relief was almost as great as the despair as she turned and wilted against him. Grazie a Dio, he cried, and pressed his thin paper cheek against hers before pulling away so he could cradle her face in his hands. Angelo had failed to shave, a testament to the kind of morning it had been, and his blue eyes were wild beneath the unruly black curls drooping dejectedly over his brow. Their eyes clung, gratitude and relief giving way to a baser need, a need for affirmation, even celebration, and suddenly his mouth was on hers, kissing her fiercely, desperately verifying that she was indeed safe, present, and accounted for. Eva froze beneath the onslaught, but only for a heartbeat. Her hands rose to his face, her mouth opened beneath his, and in those few stolen moments there was euphoric frenzy. Lips, teeth, and tongues that tasted truth and reaffirmed life. The dam broke, and there was only unbridled feeling, stripped of duty and civility, of pretense and propriety. There were no lies between them, no space. But the suspension of time could only last so long. Eva pulled back, gasping for breath, and with oxygen came remembrance.
Angelo, the SS are coming, Eva cried, hands gripping, lips pleading. I have to warn my uncle.
Angelo still held her face in his hands, his relief and lust slower to dissipate, and he forced his gaze from Eva's lush mouth to meet her pleading eyes. She immediately began to shake her head, refusing the dreadful compassion she saw in his face.
I know, Eva. The SS are everywhere, all over the city. They are rounding up Jews.
Oh, no. No, Angelo. Oh, please, no.
I went to the apartment, Eva. I went there first. When the nuns said you never came home last night, I thought you must have been caught. I thought I was too late. I thought they'd taken you, too. His breath caught, and he swallowed back the black nausea. The horror of that moment so fresh he could still taste it. Eva closed her eyes, as if closing her eyes would protect her from what he knew.
Maybe they were warned. Maybe they left before the SS arrived.
Eva said hopefully, her lips trembling around the words. They're gone, Cara, he said gently, unable to keep the truth from her. I saw the truck. I saw the truck drive away, Eva. I saw your uncle climb in. I think he must have been the last. And he saw me. Eva's legs wobbled, and Angelo was there, wrapping his arms around her, bracing her as her tears began to flow and her strength left her.
Where did they take them?
She cried, the wail only a whisper against the wall of his chest. I don't know, but we will find out. We will find out, Eva. He smoothed her hair with a trembling hand and kept her locked in his embrace. It was several long moments before either of them had the ability to say more, stricken into silence, as if a meteor were jetting toward them, promising certain annihilation, and no matter where they turned, where they hid, the results would be the same. So they stood, waiting for the world to end, wrapped in each other's arms, breathing, unable to process thoughts into words. But after a time, the brain function returned, and with it, a terrible realization. The gold. All that gold that was gathered. The gold they insisted upon. It was a lie, wasn't it? They wanted to make us think we were safe, Eva said. Angelo stepped back so he could meet her gaze. Then he cursed angrily, one of the American words he'd taught her to say more than a decade ago. He dropped his arms from around her and gripped his hair, repeating the ugly word over and over. His eyes were bright with outrage. Yes, it was all a lie. They are pulling our strings, watching us dance. The Jews apprehended in the day-long Roman roundup were transported to the Italian military college and held there under armed guard. People had gathered outside, a substantial crowd, curious bystanders and horrified neighbors who had witnessed the arrests, gawking and gossiping as people are inclined to do. They watched as truck after truck unloaded terrified prisoners into the college courtyard, SS guards pushing and shoving them with shouts and directions that almost no one understood. 1,200 Jews, more than half of them women and children, many of them in their pajamas without food or blankets, were told they were being sent to labor camps in the east. Eva's uncle, aunt, and cousins were among them. The Pope could have looked out his window and seen the crowds, the military college a mere 600 feet from Vatican City. Angelo even hoped that the Pope might intercede. After all, he'd known about the gold, even offering to make up the difference if the 50 kilograms wasn't raised. And these were mostly Roman Jews, protected by Italian law. But there was no Italian law anymore. There was only the Führer's law, and the Führer wanted all Jews deported. The Führer wanted Judenrein, a world clean of Jews. Angelo and Eva had wound their way back to the Church of the Sacred Heart, gathering information on their way. Angelo knew everyone, and everyone knew the young father. He gave comfort and instructions as they went, sending people scrambling for this or that, listening patiently, acting quickly. He was a natural leader and a good priest. It suited him. Eva stayed with him, and no one seemed to think it odd or unseemly that they were together. War made a mockery of convention.
When they arrived at the church, Angelo had deposited her firmly in a basement room, recently vacated by a janitor killed during the air raids that had left portions of the city in rubble. He'd been running through the streets, terrified. They'd found him shoeless and minus an arm, sitting against the church doors, seeking sanctuary he wouldn't find. The entrance was still lightly stained with his blood, and his rooms weren't much more hospitable. A mattress on an old spring frame, an oddly ornate yet faded Victorian-era chair, and behind a small partition a little sink, a cracked oval mirror mounted on a bare joist, and a toilet. "You will be safe here for now. The bedding is clean, the bathroom too. We knew we would need the space before long. I will tell Suora Elena you are here. She or one of the other sisters will bring you something to eat. I don't want to bring you back to the convent until I know for sure they weren't visited during the roundup."
"Almost no one knows who I am. No one, Angelo. I don't need to hide here. I could come with you to where they are holding my family. I speak German. Maybe I can help in some way."
"No. You have to stay far away from all of that. All it would take is someone pointing you out, recognizing you, and you would be inside the college with the others. All it takes is one, Eva. One person telling the wrong person. And I may not be able to save you."
She started to follow him out of the basement room.
"Maybe we can find a back entrance, an unlocked door. Maybe we can get my family out. There has..."
"No."
Angelo's roar was so enraged, so full of fury, that Eva stopped mid-sentence and stared at his livid face. Her eyes immediately filled with frustrated tears. But Angelo pushed her back, as deep into the minuscule space as he could get her, pressing her against the back wall, his arms braced on either side of her head.
"No, Eva. You avoided arrest twice today. Twice. God smiles on you, Eva, in so many ways, but I won't let you do this. I will go. I will do everything I can to save as many as I can. But if you insist on coming, I will tie you to that bed. I will tie you up, and neither one of us will leave this room."
"You act as if you aren't in any danger."
Eva put her hands on his chest and pushed him back, angry because he was angry.
"But I know better. Priests have been tortured, shot, hung from bridges, shipped off in trains loaded with the Jews they've tried to help. In fact, non-Jewish Italians caught helping Jews are sometimes worse off than the Jews themselves."
"The only thing that matters to me, the only thing in this whole world that truly scares me, is something happening to you. Do you know that? I think I could face anything, endure anything, if I knew for sure you were safe and well. I cannot serve the way I need to serve. I can't be the kind of priest I need to be and be full of fear. My faith is being drowned by my fear for you. You aren't the only one who has lost their family. Your family is my family, Eva. I've lost them too. And they can't lose you. Please, please, Eva. If you have any feelings for me at all, you will stay here until I come back for you. You will let me do what I need to do, knowing you are out of harm's way. Please."
Eva could only nod, shocked at his vehemence, touched by his sentiments. She sat down on the thin mattress and nodded once more.
"I will wait. But you have to come back here. No matter what happens, no matter how late it is, you have to come back, Angelo."
Eva lost her battle with sleep, making the hours of waiting easier to endure. She wrapped the thin blanket around her shoulders and pulled her knees into her chest, pretending that she was an oyster in a shell, a maker of glass, and nothing more. She fell asleep to the drip and creak of the basement walls, a prayer on her lips and the echo of cries and gunshots from the morning still haunting her thoughts. When she awoke, she was afraid, caught in her old dream, the one with the crowded darkness and the need to escape, to jump, though jumping was almost as terrifying as staying put. She opened her eyes, trying to convince herself that the darkness was empty and she was stationary. No one grabbed at her clothes and pulled at her legs. The light that flickered was not from moonlight penetrating the cracks in her consciousness. It was an oil lamp, turned down so low it glimmered without lighting the space around it.
Angelo!
The wick was lengthened, the flame danced, and the light grew, casting a glow over Angelo in the odd Victorian chair, sitting in the dark like he didn't want to wake her. She sat up and reached for the water Suora Elena had brought her. There was bread, too, and she split it in half and brought it to Angelo, insisting that he eat. He relented, and they ate in silence, the bread doing little to fill the empty dread in both their bellies. When they finished, Eva made him drink. Then she crouched in front of him and peered up into his face.
Tell me.
Angelo was silent. Eva took his hands in hers, giving him something to hold on to.
Tell me, Angelo.
He answered with a deep breath, as if it required courage to speak.
I walked around the perimeter of the college. I even found an unlocked door, just like you said. Being a priest with Vatican City so close by, I was sure I could simply keep walking or come up with a plausible excuse if I was caught.
He paused, then added quietly,
I saw Levi.
Eva's heart leaped in her chest, hope giving her a fleeting smile. But Angelo's grave face in the lamplight stole it from her lips, and her heart resumed beating with a despondent thud.
He and several other boys had already discovered the unlocked door. They were standing near it, arguing among themselves. I beckoned to them, whispering that there was nothing to stop them. The back was completely unguarded. They would have been able to slip away, Eva.
But they wouldn't leave,
she whispered knowingly, seeing her cousin in her mind's eye, insisting that he couldn't leave his family.
They wouldn't leave, he confirmed. One boy argued that if they left, others might be punished.
So they stood by an unlocked door and refused to use it,
Eva moaned.
Can you blame them? What would you have done, Eva?
He said softly.
I know I would not have been able to save myself if I couldn't save you with me. They wanted to stay with their families.
They are all going to die,
Eva whispered.
Maybe not,
Angelo protested, his voice just as soft.
They will be sent to camps.
You've heard the reports.
You've heard, Angelo.
You know, they are death camps.
Some still say those are rumors. British propaganda.
He didn't want to take her hope from her.
Angelo, you know.
Eva's face crumpled, and she covered her tears with shaking hands.
You heard what the soldiers said. They've seen the crematoriums. They've seen the mass graves.
We got some out, Eva,
he offered, needing to give her something, anything to hold on to, needing to rid his mind of the images her words evoked.
Some of the Jews had Italian names, non-Jewish Italian names. We convinced them to line up with the non-Jews who were arrested by mistake.
One of the prisoners spoke German, and he was keeping everyone calm, translating for the Germans, telling people what to do so there would be no reprisals. The Germans said if anyone lied, they would be killed on the spot. But bravado won the day. The officers let all those insisting they were non-Jews go. I vouched for several of them. Swore they were my parishioners. Angelo stopped talking, and Eva wrapped her arms around his neck, pulling him to her, horrified by the risks he'd taken and moved by his courage.
That was awful.
They confiscated their belongings. The guards told them it was to provide for those who couldn't work when they arrived at the labor camps. Those who were too sick, too old, or too young. But I saw the most valuable items being pocketed by the officers. And there was a woman giving birth, Eva. Right there, on the concrete floor. They wouldn't take her to a hospital. She gave birth to a healthy baby girl.
Angelo's voice broke, and for a moment he couldn't speak. He had wanted to give Eva hope, and he'd lost all of his. His arms moved around her, embracing her as she was already embracing him, and he buried his face in her hair.
The more I see, the harder it is to believe in God. What kind of priest can I be if I don't believe in God anymore?
He confessed, his voice thick.
Some days it hurts too much to believe.
It hurts more not to believe,
Eva whispered back, stroking his hair.
I'm starting to think God is the only reason any of us are still alive.
His arms tightened desperately, and his voice was a harsh whisper against her neck.
I have to get you out, Eva. I have to get you out of Rome. But I don't know where to send you, all alone as you are. I don't know where you'll be safe, and I'm afraid if I can't see for myself every day that you are alive and well, I will lose my mind.
There is nowhere that is safe, Angelo. I am as safe here as I am anywhere else. I left Florence, but I won't leave Rome. And I won't leave you,
she added gently. Seeing his devastation made her want to be strong, if only for him. It made her long to be honest. When loss was a constant threat and a terrible likelihood, there was no time for pretense. She held him as he held her. Neither of them speaking, finding a temporary peace and comfort in each other, if nothing else. She fell asleep with her head on his shoulder. In the inky dark, always blackest before dawn, Angelo walked to his apartment, only a few blocks from his old parish and the Church of the Sacred Heart where he'd left Eva for the second time in 24 hours. When daylight came, she would be safe enough, with her false papers, to walk back to Santa Cecilia on her own. The nuns had not been visited in the day-long raid, making Angelo breathe a little easier. None of the convents, churches, or monasteries where he had refugees hidden had been included in the razzia by the SS. His people, Jews and Catholics alike, were safe for the time being. And after today, there would be so many more that needed to hide. Angelo needed to sleep for a few hours, and then he would return to the Italian military college and see what more could be done for the Jews being held there. He let himself into the modest flat, leaving his cane and his hat by the door and unbuttoning his cassock, eager to be free of it, to wash himself and fall face first into his bed. He jerked in surprise when he heard his name being called from the sitting room. Monsignor Luciano was sitting in pajamas and a dressing gown, next to an unnecessary fire, a closed Bible in his hands, as if he were comforted by its heft but too tired to open the cover.
Monsignor, are you just waking up, or have you been awake all night?
A little of both.
Monsignor Luciano said with a smile in his voice.
It was a terrible day. My sleep was troubled.
Angelo didn't want to sit. He needed to sleep. But he sensed his mentor had waited there for him, and he fell heavily into a chair opposite the Monsignor and closed his eyes.
Where have you been, Angelo?
The tone was kind, not accusatory. But still, Angelo weighed his words.
Eva's uncle, aunt, and cousins were arrested today in the roundup.
After I spent all day trying, I had to tell her I could not obtain their release.
He said. It was the truth. But the simplicity of the truth was in itself a lie. Words did not exist that could fully express the horror of the day, the desperation and the gut-sickening realization that he was almost powerless to save anyone.
I am worried for you, my young friend, Monsignor Luciano admitted quietly. Why?
Angelo was worried too, but he doubted his concerns were the same as the Monsignor's.
This is the girl who made you question your decision to become a priest. This is Eva.
Monsignor Luciano clearly hadn't forgotten Angelo's agonized confession, or his counsel to Angelo after that terrible, wonderful trip in August of 1939.
Yes, it is, Angelo nodded, his eyes on his mentor. You love her?
Yes, I do.
But love in itself isn't sinful,
Angelo said simply. Another truth that skirted a lie.
True, but it is distracting. And you've promised your heart to another. God's heart is big enough for all of mankind, yet mine can't be big enough for two. Not when you're a priest. You know this, Angelo.
The Monsignor sighed.
You know the dangers. I have loved her since I was a child. It isn't something new, something I haven't grown accustomed to. My heart is God's.
Truth, 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 and still a lie.
We are at war. War has a way of stripping us of perspective. War is about life and death, and it paints everything in shades of now or never. We do things we otherwise wouldn't, because never is so frightening and now so comforting. Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we may die. You are quoting Isaiah. You must be worried.
Luciano laughed ruefully.
Do not change the subject. You may think I'm rationalizing, and I probably am. But I know one thing. She makes me serve him better. In fact, she is the very reason I serve.
Monsignor Luciano raised his eyebrows and folded his hands, ever the patient father, listening as his child tried to talk his way out of hell.
In every Jewish face I see her. I think it would be easier to ignore their plight and say, as some have done, it was foretold. They crucified our Lord. Some say that, Monsignor. You know they do.
Monsignor Luciano nodded his head once, slowly, and Angelo knew with a flash of intuition that the Monsignor had said the very same thing himself at one time or another.
But Eva didn't crucify our Lord. Her father didn't either. Not a single Jew living on this earth crucified our Lord.
Angelo felt his neck getting hot and his temper building in his chest. He paused and took a deep breath, reminding himself that the Monsignor was not the one persecuting the Jews.
They are just people. And many of them, most of them, are good people. Camillo and Eva loved me and gave me a home. They are my home. Signore Rosselli would never admit it, but I know that he gave a great deal of money to the church so that I would be allowed to attend seminary. I believe he donated again so that I would have a position waiting for me when I became a priest. I never waited in line, Monsignor. Unlike so many others, after ordination I was simply assigned a parish. It was that money and your influence, not anything I did. Camillo gave my grandparents a home, and when the laws were passed, those ridiculous laws, Camillo Rosselli signed his possessions and all his property over to them. He asked that they would return a portion if the laws were ever revoked. And if they weren't, he asked that they look after Eva, and give her a home when he was gone, should she need it.
When I see a family running for their lives, no home, no country, no one to protect them, hunted, I see Eva.
and it makes me try harder. It makes me pray harder. It gives me purpose, Monsignor. I see Eva. Try.